You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Casey and Elma, for those who haven't come across you online, introduce yourself and tell our listeners what we're talking about today.
My name's Casey Vilhauer. I'm a pharmacist and I'm the CEO of Vaxi Taxi.
My name is Alma Michelson. I'm a pharmacist as well. I'm a director of pharmacy operations and co-founder at Vaxi Taxi.
Yeah, we'd love to share with you about the start of Vaxi Taxi, what we're doing, and what we feel our purpose is.
I've obtained a lot of URLs in my life for a lot of silly ideas I've had for businesses and so on. I keep them for 2 years or whatever, and then they go off to pasture. When you guys came across VaxiTaxi.com and you knew that was available, that had to be a crazy day that you said, I can't believe this is available. When did you get that URL?
Sure. It was in early 2020, possibly even late 2019, actually. But Mike, we've got a list of URLs that we think are pretty great. So truth be told, VaxiTaxi wasn't even at the top of it.
Now, I can't believe that. Give me...
Nope, top secret, Mike. Top secret, but they're coming.
You mean you have ones that are still available?
Not anymore. They were before we took them.
Because you got them.
Yeah.
And they're better than Vaxi Taxi.
Well, I think so.
Was there some that you tried to get that you thought were better than Vaxi Taxi and they weren't available?
Not really. We wanted ones that were very clear on what we do and how you do it. And that's really hard to do with just two words or one title. And so, no, I don't think there are any that's specific for this business that would be better. But we have other projects in the works, and those have really great URLs.
Vaxi Taxi is so good. It's almost like you looked through the internet URLs available, you found a cool name, and you said, hey, let's make a business around that. It's just hard for me to believe that in 2020 still, a cool name like Vaxi Taxi, which really defines what your business is, was available.
Well, I think, you know, the hard part for me was coming to terms with the fact that this business of what we're doing hadn't been done yet. So not just the name,
yeah,
but actually what we were doing.
All right. So spill the beans now, Casey. What are we doing? What is Vaxi Taxi?
Sure. So the best way I can describe it is we are the Uber Eats of pharmacy. So we have our pharmacists, our immunizers, and they partner with us and they're independent contractors. And then we have our pharmacies, which would be like the restaurants, and our immunizers, they stop, they pick up their vaccines and they go to patients' homes.
The pharmacists are independent contractors. They're their own thing.
Yep. So they're just like the drivers for Uber Eats.
Are any of them pharmacy owners or are they pharmacists?
They're pharmacists. And so our job, where Vaxi Taxi comes in, is because any community pharmacy could send a pharmacist out and about to give vaccines. But what we bring to the table that's good is that, or makes it simpler, is that we coordinate all of the scheduling. We have centralized scheduling, centralized clinical consultations, and the pharmacists are then not on the payroll of the stores. And we do all of their training. So we do all of their home health training, and we do all of their equipment, things like that. And we provide all the information that they need to go out and do these appointments.
So Elma, was this just a coincidence that this happens to fall in when pharmacy vaccinations, arguably with COVID, is the hottest thing going? Did this so happen that it just lined up with you guys doing this?
Vaxi Taxi really started prior to COVID. I think what sparked Vaxi Taxi is some changes in Iowa law. And those recent changes were where the pharmacist became the prescriber of vaccines and immunizations. That is the new Iowa statewide protocol. Prior to, and it's been coming for a couple of years, is just that, you know, chain pharmacies in our state, no one was really really ready for it. No one really thought it would happen. And then it did finally go into effect actually this year. But when the law was written, Casey knew exactly what it meant. And so she was able to talk with her husband and some of her friends and discuss this idea that, you know, wouldn't it be great if you can just bring flu shots to our home where kids are at home watching TV and you can distract them in that way, and it would be easy and seamless and painless. And with the new law change of statewide immunization protocol and Casey's idea of why don't we just bring the vaccines to people's homes, she finally was able to act on that idea, and that's how VaxiTaxi came about. So it was prior to COVID. It was around flu shots and busy families and being able to provide a service that fits our modern society. And that is, if you need the vaccine, you can get it with just a phone call and it can come to you.
A previous guest of mine was talking about the new ideals, and I'm pretty sure it was Iowa, that they took some of the mandates and just by changing a few things, they allowed Iowa pharmacists and pharmacies to do some really cool things. I forget all the details, but it sounds like what we're talking about here.
Another detail that is really cool, recent, maybe this is the law that you're talking about. The wording says that pharmacists can order test and treatment of COVID, flu, and strep. That is not here right now, but that wording is in place, and companies will be acting on it anytime.
When you guys set this up, from the very beginning, you knew you were going to be using not your own employees, let's put it that way, 1099 pharmacists.
Yeah, absolutely. It was more of a vision of, we know that there's pharmacists that want to do this, but it might not be a full-time job. You know, typically 17 weeks out of the year, we're really heavy on flu season, and we're giving a lot of pneumonia shots and some back-to-school shots as well. But that usually is about 17 weeks out of the year. So, you know, how can we create something for pharmacists to do? Because they'd be great at it. That wasn't full time. You know, how do we pull these people out to help fill those gaps? So, yep, absolutely. From the beginning, it was based on using people that didn't want to do it full time. And some of that too also goes back to myself and Alma. We're both moms. We both have three young children. And you know, there's in corporate, like retail pharmacy right now, it's hard. It's hard to work a full-time schedule. And so a lot of our friends and colleagues have backed down to like 30 hours a week or part-time, things like that. So this is a perfect job for someone like that. It's perfect for a new grad or someone who's recently retired. So absolutely.
Casey, what were you doing 2 years ago when this idea came to you?
I was being a mom. I was not in the world of pharmacy. Granted, my husband is a community pharmacist and he was in pharmacy, but I was completely removed from the world of pharmacy.
Were you out searching for a business idea?
No.
Or was it such a good idea that it came to you that you had to do something about it?
I know that like schools try to teach like entrepreneurial mindsets and like everyone's, you know, using those buzzwords and things, but I stand by the fact, and it's probably a very unpopular opinion, but you don't set out to own a business or start a business as your like primary goal. You fix a problem. And that's what I've always done, even when I was working like in a chain pharmacy. You know, we would have like workflow issues. We would have all kinds of issues, patient issues, things like that, right? Nothing irks me more than to solve the same problem twice, because at that point you have a system problem. And so that's what I did. And I was pretty good at, these are our resources. How do we completely revamp the pharmacy in order to fix it with no money or no space or, you know, whatever. But that's what I like doing. That's just my nature. So planning, logistics, fixing problems, that's what I do.
When you then had this idea, how did you then test it? Or how much did you build before you tested it and so on?
Yeah. So the first fall, which would have been the fall of 2020, was the first test. And, you know, it started with all of the things that come to mind originally to every pharmacist is, you know, is it, can you get a license for it? Can you, you know, make sure that you can have insurance for it? Do you have people to do it? Is there a demand for it? And so we just started checking off those boxes. Like, let's see if we can get a license for it. Let's see if we can, you know, find insurance. And we just worked our way down the line. And then we started there with cash payers. So it was a concierge service geared at pharmacies and cash payers. And when we realized that we could figure out the logistics and how we could scale it and what we needed for software, then we decided now's the time to broaden our scope and find some insurance companies that are willing to pay for this as well. Funny turn of events, COVID happened and there became a COVID vaccine. And at that point, we didn't have to go looking for insurance companies to partner with us. There were patients coming to us, there were payers coming to us, and we said, absolutely. Our customer base is a little bit different because we were familiar with a tech-savvy online group, but with COVID, those patients that we were trying to help and reach that really couldn't get out or were having a lot of access issues, those patients are not necessarily a tech-savvy group. So, you know, it was an extreme pivot on what we were doing. At that point we needed to rely heavily on phones, and that wasn't something in our original plan. Luckily, we had a little experience under our belt, so we knew how to go about it. But to answer your question, it was trial and error, and we could have kept planning with the software, or we could have just done it. And we went with, let's just try it. What's the worst that could happen?
Being that you were able to do some cash stuff first, you were able to have some customers, you were able to bounce in and back and forth instead of putting all your eggs in a big basket and having that basket fall. You were able to kind of have some proof of concepts kind of as you kind of went along, almost tit for tat, and you were able to build, well, kind of back and forth, sort of.
Yeah. You know, when I met Casey, actually, I should back up. So I started volunteering with her in April. I met her online in November. She opened up Vaxi Taxi in July of 2020. And when I started talking to her, you know, it was really to say, hey, congratulations. This is awesome. Vaxi Taxi is a great idea. I cannot believe it's here in Ankeny. And in November, between November and April, what I can tell you is, I could tell that Casey was going back and forth between what her business model would look like. Myself, I actually have an inactive real estate license. And when she described to me her idea, you know, I said, oh, okay. So it's kind of like a real estate company. You know, you have the broker and all the realtors are independent contractors and they're managing their own transactions. And so to me, that was like, wow, that's amazing. That's awesome. Pharmacists would be able to, you know, have their own patients and you are in a way a caseworker, a case manager. And that was in November. And she's like, yeah, that's, you know, that's exactly it. But then she went back and forth and with reason, you know, when COVID happened and when we had to figure out how you scale up with that type of an idea, how do you keep the patient records and billing and everything in place?
Do some pharmacists have in their chain employment contract that they can't do this? And are there ways around that?
That's a hot topic right now, Mike. So what we're really proud of is that we were able to utilize pharmacists that still wanted to have active patient care roles, but they did things like one owned a yoga studio, one was a stay-at-home dad, one was is strictly like clinical MTM services from a remote location. Like all of these pharmacists were able to put them in place, and therefore, you know, we don't have to pull them out of workflow in a community pharmacy because right now, more than ever, we need people in those roles. But we were able to use pharmacists that are qualified, licensed, more than capable, and want to do it to bring immunizations and clinical services to patients at home.
There's enough people that have left the chains that still want to be involved, but in their own way, sort of. It sounds like a great fit.
Yeah, it really is. We kick ourselves that we didn't start doing this, and by, I mean, 3 years earlier, because at that point, when COVID would have hit, we would have had the network already built out to have access points for all of these patients, like, you know, across Iowa. We would have already had that worked out. And I think, you know, across the country in general, like county health departments were trying to reach these patients that they hadn't necessarily served before, and we didn't have a good list of who the homebound patients are. So it definitely, it's definitely opportunity.
But I think, Casey, that we have to be really careful before we can think about kicking ourselves, but we have to be really careful before we actually kick ourselves, because think back, like, it's easy to think, not that necessarily we needed video conferencing to do this 3 years ago, but we tend to forget where things were even 3 years ago. I mean, right now you think, oh yeah, video conferencing and Apple Watches and Google Pay and this and that, that's all been around forever, but you know, it hasn't. So 3 years is a long, long time. In a company like yours, which is very technology-based, very communication-based, that's a long time to go back. That's almost like going back to the wagon wheels, you know? So we have to be easy on ourselves.
Well, I appreciate that, Mike. But, you know, the same thing applies. There's pharmacists that want to do it 3 years ago, and there's patients that needed it 3 years ago. It's just COVID brought it to light for the whole country. Because we're all talking about vaccines, but these are the same patients that didn't have access to vaccines in 2014 when I was working in a retail pharmacy.
So this idea came to you in 2019. Let's go back to 2014. Let's go 5 years earlier. Why didn't you have the idea then? Was it stress? Was it a young family? What was the reason why you didn't have the idea, in your opinion, in 2014?
Yeah, it was financial constraints. I relied on my job, and it took a life-altering situation for me to realize that I did not need that job as badly as I needed to live my life. And I had a medical condition, and I thought I was going to die. I did, but I didn't. And so that's wonderful. But in the same time, you know, I left my job. I had three young kids. My youngest was 6 months old at that time. And we sold our house and we moved closer to family. We downgraded our lifestyle. And I said, for the next few years, I really need to focus on what is important. So 2014 was a really hard time. But this, it turned into something better, because then for the most recent 5 years, I haven't been in a pharmacy. I haven't been behind the counter. I have a completely different perspective on what pharmacists can and should offer patients, because I was a patient. I was strictly a patient. I was a mom, and I was on the other side of the counter, and I knew what I needed to make my life easier, better. And I was able to step away from being a pharmacist and just into that, what do people really want mindset.
Pharmacy, with the extended length of school and all these, whatever the hell you call them, all these PG stuff. I don't know what the hell they are. I know it starts with a PG, PG one and two, whatever the hell those are. But with that, with the stress, with the debt, those are not conducive to entrepreneurial ideas, not to mention the follow through.
You're absolutely right. And you know, so it was easier for me to step away or to go into this, because I knew my risk was relatively low, just doing it on a really, really small scale. But in Alma's case, you know, she left a really great position to join Vaxi Taxi, and that's terrifying. And I feel like there's probably a number of pharmacists in that position.
Elma, what trait did you have that has you sitting there now versus someone else that just looked at Casey from a distance?
If she doesn't answer this question correctly, I'm gonna buzz in.
This is a lot of pressure.
Come on.
In Casey's words, I am her problem solver. That is in her words. You know, she, as I was telling my family members, hey, I met this person, Casey. She's got this awesome idea. And, you know, my sister, she's like, oh my gosh, this sounds like a storm of ideas. It sounds like chaos. And you want to go into that? You want to work with that? I was like, yeah, yes, I do. And so I was talking to Casey and she said, you know, you just really helped me ground all of these ideas and they're all up here and they're all up in space, but you help me make that one decision that's going to really bring that idea down and solidify it. So I would say, I think I'm a problem solver. And, as Casey said, I'm a natural processor.
I know you mentioned earlier, you said, I couldn't believe it was like in the same town.
Right.
How far would you have reached out? Would you have done this like an hour away, like 3 hours away? We talked about changing communication. Given the new world of video conferencing, would you have offered your services if Casey was across the country? How much did being close to her have its end effect of you being with the company? Did it give you the confidence to reach out? Like you had a common denominator?
It definitely helped. I'm a mom of three kids as well. And so, you know, if this company was in New York, I don't think I would leave my three kids and fly to volunteer for a clinic, vaccination clinic. And so with her being this close, it certainly was helpful. It was right here in Iowa and it was current. It was related to the new laws that were being passed in the state and what the profession is doing. So it definitely helped with her being close.
It's kind of like the Beatles. I mean, they might have joined each other if they ran into each other at a music festival somewhere 3 hours away from Liverpool and some other place in Europe, wherever the hell. I don't know. I don't know. What else don't I know? I don't know the pharmacist PGU stuff, and I don't know my way around Europe, but I know Liverpool. But if they were from different areas, it wouldn't have happened. They had a lot of common. And so I imagine you had your age, your kids, your both from Iowa, you're 20 minutes apart. I imagine that helped to make that original contact that you made with Casey.
I would say, well, first of all, I want to back up and say what Alma brings to the table is she is fearless. That is a really good way to describe her. And I think it is great that we were close, but I had a really hard time putting into words what I needed for my next person, right? Like who is going to actually help me do this at the next level? It was hard for me to put that into words. And then how do you advertise that necessarily, right? When you're still kind of trying to develop that role. And Alma just like, she checked all those boxes. So I think one of our first meetings was we were actually doing appointments together. And it was, I had meetings like on a Zoom in like the back of my car. And she was like, give me the steering wheel, give me the stuff, I'm doing all of it. And those kind of things. So it was great because I was like, this is, you just need people that are going to just do it. And I think what Alma brings to the table is, like I said, she's fearless and she complements very well all of the things that catch me or hold me up in making decisions or finding direction. And on top of it, one day she said, you know, I feel like this isn't just a job. I feel like it's a movement. And I told her, I was like, that's probably, and that's how I know that you really understand what we're doing. I mean, that says it all. I never would have said that, but that just perfectly describes how I want our company culture to develop. And I believe that I know for a fact that she believes in what we're doing, and we just make a good fit that way.
When you say she compliments you, is that sufficient, or does she change you at all? And do you need to be changed at all?
Well, I think we've gotten to a point where we have so much on our plate and we have so many ideas for growth and we're going in a million different directions that, you know, we each have our skills that we're good at. And so she is definitely much better at certain things. And I can kind of stay true to what I am good at or what I think I'm good at. And we can move on and we can make bigger progress that way.
One time, Casey used the term, you're creating and I'm editing. So she's an editor. And I really feel comfortable in referring to our dynamic in such a way, because if I, you know, if Casey has an idea and I bring that idea and I create something out of it and show her a product, she's really good at improving it and making improvements that take that idea or that creation and just make it better. Half of it is because she was out of the pharmacy world for 5 years that all of a sudden she sees things a little bit differently than I do, who was, you know, working. Well, I still work PRN for a retail pharmacy. And so I think our relationship of being a creator, being an editor, really works.
You're kind of the brake in the gas. And sometimes that switches.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's great.
That's a nice mix. I like seeing companies when you've got two people involved where you're able to see right away that there's a good reason for two people involved. Instead of having two people that are both built out of the same mold, it's like, why? You know, and to have two people that have very nice complementing skills, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think about it every day, how lucky I am that we were able to connect and all with Alma, but also like our immediate circle of pharmacists that we first, our first team of immunizers acting as independent contractors. Like it just, it brought a lot of really great providers into our circles.
We talked about the independent contractors or the pharmacists. What about the actual business? I'm thinking that I'm looking at maybe the two full-time employees, and what do you have part-time and what do you have for independent contractors and what kind of things do they do? I'm not talking the boring pharmacy stuff. I'm talking the business stuff.
Right. So, you know, the boring pharmacy stuff, that still is our bread and butter, Mike. So we spend, you know, a lot of time and energy and funds on that.
On the actual like medical pharmacy, talking about that stuff. All right. That's for some other boring podcast. Come on. We're going to talk about the business stuff now.
Yep. So the sexy side of our business, right? Is that what you want to talk about?
Yes.
That's great. So, you know, like every startup, we have a conglomeration of people. So, you know, fractional CFO, we have our per diem marketing, we have people to step in. We have someone else managing our website and, you know, a part-time IT developer and a part-time COO. So like all of these people, we've found them, we've brought them on as, you know, independent contractors as well for the services when we need them. It also opens the door for if it's going really well, we have the opportunity to hire them.
Are any of them remote or are they all local?
They are local, but we never have met them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, that's not true. That's not true. No, that's not true. We have met with our marketing team.
That's interesting. They're local, but because of, I guess you could blame it on COVID at first that you haven't sat down and, well, you didn't have the initial thing, probably wasn't a warm in-person meeting, and then it probably just continued that way, even though they're local.
I think it was structured out of efficiency.
Even without COVID, you would have done it this way?
Yep, absolutely. COVID was, it opened a lot of opportunities for us, or doors of opportunity, I guess, for talking with people and meeting with people that otherwise would have required a flight, right? A hotel stay and a plane ride somewhere. But when meeting over Zoom became the standard, we no longer lacked access to all of these individuals. So like payers, right? And other startups or other parts of the industry.
you're saying that you're local, you're part-time COO and CFO and all these people, they're local, but you haven't met them.
Right.
In person.
In person, yeah.
You've done it through video.
Mm-hmm. And we talk a lot over text and phone.
So COVID didn't prevent you from meeting them, but because of COVID and because the new norm was saying it's okay and maybe even preferred for a little bit there to do things through Zoom, you haven't had to jump on a plane to do things with some of your payers and things like that. But your local people, you probably would have had more lunches and more in-person stuff pre-COVID just because it wasn't polite and the norm to meet someone who was 5 miles away to do it through video, but now it is.
Right. And it was easier to connect with like multiple different marketing firms, for example, or marketing agencies to, you know, we could interview four of them in a day because we're on Zoom, whereas that would have probably taken 3 days otherwise.
It's amazing. My brother has a marketing firm out in California, and breaking down that barrier of not having to hop on a flight for a 3-day trip for a half hour meeting is really something else. And I think it took something as big as a pandemic to have everybody agree to that standard at the same time.
Yep, I agree. And then, you know, our whole goal was to remain really light, really mobile. And so that the contractor, so the pharmacist, they don't need a lot of equipment, right, at home. They don't need, the goal is to be able to have a very small footprint for all of our contractors and the company in general. But, you know, so as great as it was to be able to do all of these things remotely from the start as we were starting to scale, we quickly realized we need a headquarters. We need a central office. We need to bring it all back to a central location, because there are some things, you know, training, hiring, onboarding, company discussions, you know, meetings. There are just some that it has to be in person. It functions better. We do our brainstorming sessions in person. Things like that.
It's so cool what's going to end up, and I don't think anybody knows, it's so cool to find out what's going to end up having to be in person and what's going to be able to be online. And I don't think anybody really knows it yet, but I think it's going to be a universal feel that multiple people are going to come up, I think, with the same answers, because I think a lot of it's human nature. You know, brainstorming maybe is better in person, where the details of those sessions or the fallout of different things, maybe not. You know, I don't think anybody knows that, but I think it's going to be universal.
I agree. I think, you know, we can have brainstorming sessions and it all remains very positive and very like, all for the purpose of like growing, because when you're in person, and you get to know each other in the office, you're personable, right? You get to know, mm-hmm. You get to hear things that you wouldn't otherwise hear from a remote location. And so you get to know somebody, you connect with them. So then when you're in a brainstorming session and you really, you know, Alma throws out a terrible idea, she doesn't take it personal when I say it.
Right. You don't take it personally because you have that time to gel with each other more off camera. Right.
And I think that's across the board. That's with our whole team, including the clinical part-time pharmacist.
We talk about headquarters. How often do they have to get to the headquarters? I take it they probably get some equipment and the medicine from you. Is that right?
We have partners, like independent pharmacies, where the pharmacist will go and pick up the medications, pick up the order for their route, and we will provide the billing, data entry, training, hiring, and, you know, refill packs for their routes.
So you've got a couple partners. You've got the pharmacists and you have independent pharmacies that have come on. They're the pickup spot for the drugs and that kind of stuff. And it probably helps to have a license behind that.
Well, we have our own license. We do have the ability still to get product.
This is just for convenient factors. They're around the neighborhood and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's for convenience of being able to bring this to more patients and more communities.
I ain't no genius, but that right there then allows you to go U.S. and worldwide, right? Because they're not coming to your headquarters in Iowa for this. They're going to these pharmacies across the country.
You got it. That's right.
That's where your growth comes in.
Yep.
That's really cool. What has the reception been from mainly independent pharmacies that are doing this? What's the reception been?
You know, they love it. We are able to increase their profits by 20% by being and partnering with them in one county. And we're doing all the hard work for them. And they are able to increase immunization rates in their community. And those immunization rates may affect their reimbursement that they get on other medications. And so we are an add-on service to them that's benefiting them, their community, their patients, and our pharmacists love it.
What is the tie-in? All right, like our pharmacy doesn't do vaccinations. If, for example, we were one of the partners, would somehow supplying the vaccine, even though it's not our employees, I'm taking it somehow that that vaccination would be credit to us, that we did the vaccine or we helped with the vaccine somehow, even though the pharmacist is not our employee.
Right. So we provide your pharmacy with the pharmacist. So you hire us. We work for you. And we bring you trained, equipped staff.
Oh, so that pharmacist becomes our employee for that?
They're still an independent contractor, but we found them for you. We trained them, we equipped them so that they are not on your payroll.
If that pharmacist was on a top of a mountain and could go either way, are they more ours or more yours, even though they're a 1099 person?
I would say they're more yours.
They're more ours.
Yep, because they are going to be registered. You are going to maintain the records at your pharmacy for what that pharmacist is doing. But we, our job is to bring them to you and give them all of the scheduling and mobile equipment that they need and provide the platform that that individual needs to go out and do these appointments.
Would it be the same as if, like, our pharmacy used a temporary pharmacy staffing? They're not really our employee, but they're in our pharmacy. Would that be the same thing?
Yeah, you hire a staffing agency. So they have already vetted that pharmacist that they're sending to you, and that pharmacist is theirs, and you hired the company to send someone. From a clinical standpoint, that pharmacist is yours because they're going on your records as verifying your prescriptions and taking your orders. And yeah, but from a business standpoint, they are part of the staffing agency.
Gotcha.
So your pharmacy doesn't do immunizations, and how come?
Laziness.
I doubt that, but okay.
Well, laziness, and also now it is there with COVID, but the reimbursement wasn't adequate either.
Mm-hmm.
The remuneration wasn't there.
For you to take on a full-time employee and to do that.
Well, not even that. I mean, either I have pharmacists there and either they're there alone and it's not worth the stress on them to have them do it if they're alone, or I'm there and it's not worth it financially for me to not get paid enough for my time. And then that laziness is a big factor. I mean, when I say lazy, I'm kind of joking, but I mean, I'm doing this for this much money when I could be doing something else for more. And maybe that's just not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a reason.
So if somebody brought it to you, like in our case, we brought it to you, and it required no additional payroll, and we brought you the entire system of what you need for ordering, and we bring you the staff to provide, you know, the immunizations. Is it something that you would consider?
That sounds like a no-brainer to me, because I'm not doing and I'm not training it. It's not disrupting workflow. I don't have to worry about some staff maybe having a moral stance against a certain thing. All that kind of goes out the window. So it's a cool concept, and I can see independence really getting behind it, especially people like me.
So back to your original question of, you know, how is it being received? I think you're one of many owners that have said to us, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And we feel good about it too. And I'm not sure in your area what it looks like for home health care, but in Iowa, there's a lot of home health agencies that are not doing routine immunizations because of the logistics of scheduling it, transporting it, maintaining cold chain, all of those things. So, you know, there's a need for it, but it just has never been brought up because home health care is kind of the forgotten child of healthcare in general. But those could be, you know, your patients that you wouldn't have had otherwise.
And arguably the people that are asking me for vaccines still are ones that can't easily get to whatever options they currently have in town for whatever reasons, whether it's transportation or knowledge or not trusting some, whatever the reason they're asking me, that would be an option. What's the biggest impedance to your growth? I imagine if I'm in your shoes, I want to be in every city in the U.S. And what's the biggest hurdle in doing that?
It's the legal and regulatory between the states. So what pharmacists can do from state to state, there's, you know, every state is its own animal. So in Iowa, you know, we got lucky. We have that immunization statewide protocol. But, you know, we're the only profession facing a negative 3% job growth over the next 10 years. So there's pharmacists out there that are not doing pharmacy, that will not be doing pharmacy jobs because outside of this immediate need for COVID, we've got pharmacists that want to do it. And they would make a huge impact in their communities, but they can't get paid if they don't have provider status with Medicare.
In Iowa, the pharmacists can kind of decide who's going to get a shot and then off they go. But don't the pharmacies or can't pharmacies, like when we were doing vaccines a few years ago, we had cooperative practice kind of things. That can be done in other states, though, right?
It can. So it's tricky. So when our immunization statewide protocol went into effect here in Iowa, the sun set on the ability to have a physician signed protocol, which it's a great thing because at that point, if we can no longer have a physician signed protocol, it puts the payers in a position to have to recognize pharmacists as providers. Otherwise, you're not going to be doing vaccines in your pharmacies anymore. So, you know, that was great. However, the payers have not been very receptive to recognizing pharmacists as providers.
So in other states that already have a cooperative practice going on, would that be okay? Or maybe it's hard for some pharmacies who aren't doing it to get into a practice. Where's the problem there?
Yeah, so having a collaborative practice agreement solves our immediate need as a profession. That solves our immediate problem, which is getting paid right now for giving vaccines. But when we look 5 years into the future, and we hope at that time, you know, pharmacists can actually get paid for the vaccines that they can order legally. So if a 16-year-old needs a second dose Gardasil vaccine, we can do that in Iowa. But now we need it to be recognized as, we need the payers to recognize us so that when we are that provider on that order, on that vaccine order, that we get paid for it.
All right. But let's say a pharmacy has a collaborative practice. Sounds like that'd be a good place to go. But if you're in a state and you don't have a collaborative practice set up and you don't have provider status, that would be a tough nut to crack.
Even in states where they do have collaborative practice, I think I was looking up the state of Georgia, they do have collaborative practice. Each one of those doctors does have a limit of how many pharmacists they sign with.
Oh.
So that would be another limiting factor of how many pharmacists that doctor can be overseeing.
So it's not just the pharmacy, it might be the pharmacist, and then you couldn't have Joe's Pharmacy having 20 different pharmacists coming from Vaxi Taxi.
It's the number of pharmacists and the number of pharmacies. I don't know which. I know there was a number 10, but I don't know if it was 10 pharmacies. And so it was a lot more pharmacists, obviously, then. But there is that is also another limiting factor in the model that has collaborative practice agreement.
Gotcha. It's some magic combination number.
Although in the state of Iowa, right before the statewide immunization protocol, I don't think we had that as a limitation for collaborative practice agreements. Right before pharmacists were their own providers, a lot of pharmacies in Iowa used the state epidemiologist as the protocol provider. And it was a lot of pharmacies and a lot of pharmacists.
I put words in your mouth thinking that would be my goal to go to all these different states. Is that a goal to get into another state? And I know that's bigger because right now you're maybe in your city, but once you conquer Iowa, will that be another goal with Vaxi Taxi?
Absolutely. I think, it comes back to how Alma described it as a movement. And we have pharmacies all over the country reaching out to us already. We have pharmacists reaching out to us as well. There's people that want to do it. There's people who want the service, and it's our job to connect them. And I don't really see a market where it doesn't work. I'd love to be able to help my aunt in California and my niece and nephew that live in Chicago. And I think both of those people I know would be very appreciative of the service.
Ladies, without giving too much away, because we already talked about your cool URLs, and Casey, by the way you sort of told me about these, I know you're not going to spill them out to me.
I'm not. I'm sorry, Mike.
That's right. I know you've got something there. But as much as you can tell us about your 10-year goal, and maybe you tie into this a little bit of your vision statement so I can try to pick that apart somehow, but it sounds like it's bigger than just vaccines. I don't know if it's bigger than just home visits. Give me something.
I think about all the things that I wish I could have done for patients coming into the pharmacy when I worked in a retail setting. And there wasn't enough time, there wasn't enough resources. And I could make this list of what I wish I had to do my job. And that's what we want to provide for pharmacists, is to give them all the resources they need to do exactly what they want to do to practice. And at the end of the day, it's great patient care. Not good enough.
It's good. It's good. But here's what I'm hearing. Uber's done different stuff. So what you're going to do, Casey and Alma, is you're going to take Vaxi Taxi. You're going to use one of your new URLs to pull a little bit away from the Vaxi part, still kind of keeping the taxi part. And your handheld app is going to be the pharmacy, not necessarily the drugs, but it's going to be all the pharmacy services in a handheld app. And then you're going to set up the pharmacists and the patients, and it's going to be online visits / let me swing over to the pharmacy that we're a partner with and we'll get that to your house. So that's your future.
Yep. You got it, Mike. You nailed it.
That's something like that, right?
Right. Yeah. So it's almost as if the pharmacist is a caseworker and right. is in your home and can actually get paid for all the services they can do in your home, which is more than a caseworker.
Like right now, we're in a position right now where we are being invited into homes for whatever reason, whether that is a primary care physician that is sending us there or a home health agency that's sending us there or even a payer, an insurance company is sending us to someone's home. And while we're there, we know what else we can do. And we're like, how do pharmacists fit into a home healthcare space? It's not a space that we are familiar with working in. So there's a lot to be learned, and there's a huge opportunity to document what we can do and what patients are needing and where we could provide the most benefit. I believe that starts with vaccines, but I think there's a huge market for, you know, you walk into somebody's house and they've got a pile of medications that just continues to be shipped from the mail order facility and patients aren't taking them correctly. And, you know, there's a lot of people and entities that would benefit from a pharmacist having that consultation in that patient's home.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, we have customers, you talk to them and it's like, you know, they've got 9 different medicines or something, and you can talk to them, but it's like, oh, I'd love to be sitting at their counter with them at home and actually touching those bottles and, you know, realizing that something's not right just because they have something out of reach, you know, and they don't want to get up and get it. You know, it's as simple as that, but you don't get that till it's in the home.
Right.
Casey and Alma, very forward thinking, and it's going to bring a lot of the joy in pharmacy back to pharmacists that maybe need to get out of some of that brick and mortar, and maybe more so some of the psychological burden that brick and mortar brings along with them. And so I think you're doing some really cool things there.
It's good for pharmacists. It's good for the pharmacies. And, you know, hopefully we can relieve some of the burden, because I know that I used to do home visits after my shifts for patients that couldn't get out. We only delivered to them. We would do their shots. I would personally do them after my shifts were over on my own free time. And every single pharmacy has those patients. We know this because they've been referring them to us. So we know that. Hopefully we can take some, you know, some burden off of the pharmacist and also engage a whole new group of individuals that can do this.
I'm going to look all over for those URLs.
Mike, I got a book. I have a $1 million idea book.
You do?
I do. And Alma has one too. And a lot of these things are not even pharmacy related, but we're excited to move on to those someday somehow.
I'm going to have to sign like a non-disclosure agreement and just get on and talk with you guys sometime and just hear them, because they sound...
They're fun.
Yeah, they sound fun and they sound very interesting. So we'll be watching and waiting for the next time you roll one out. We got to get you back on here for sure.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, ladies. Such a pleasure.
You bet.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.